Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Arturo.
Hello everyone.
And Gurs.
Hi.
And I am your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Fatal Fury 2, The New Battle, aka Battle Fighters Garu Densetsu 2, which released in 1993. Fatal Fury Legend of the Hungry Wolf was one of the first titles we covered for this podcast back in March 2022, so I figured it was time we revisit the world with this OVA based on the franchise. It was animated by Studio Comet, the studio behind Fatal Fury Legend of the Hungry Wolf, and Art of Fighting, both of which we covered on this podcast. Fatal Fury 2, The New Battle, currently has a My Animalist score of 6.69.
Nice.
Thank you. Paused for that.
I noticed.
Fatal Fury is a fighting game franchise by SNK, which actually has a new title coming out later this year, Fatal Fury City of the Wolves. So expect us to do the third movie slash OVA, I forget which. In a few months. My synopsis for this is: a new unbeatable fighter is on the scene. Can Terry win? Arturo, what do you have?
Let me know if it spoils too much, but after losing one fight, Terry falls into alcoholism and depression until his subconscious shows him the move he'll need to win the fight.
Okay, well, no need for yours, Gurs. Thank you for coming, everyone.
Okay.
Now, Gurs, what do you have?
After beating the evil goose, Terry starts working construction. One day, he gets beat up by a random flamboyant German while he is injured and decides he will never win and becomes a professional drunk hobo.
Accurate.
He gets beat once! This is so fucking stupid!
I mean, we're going to get into it, but he was in a coma for 3 days. Anyway, it starts on a title card, and then in a minute I'm going to say that there's a title card, because for some reason there are two title cards in this. We open properly on an ornate castle as someone walks down one of the hallways. No, I won't make a joke that it's M. Bison.
No, that comes later.
It basically is.
They inspect a black rose from a vase, throw it behind them, and then begin to play their big organ.
Whoa, I did not know. This is not safe for work.
The sound of the organ continues as we cut to a city and someone with a beard having beaten up a pub bouncer or secret service police officer or something. And then we cut to a helicopter landing with the organ player exiting to a crowd of their soldiers in tank tops for some reason, with defeated slash dead people littering the landscape.
I heard a
cat. It's not for no some reason. It's just, you know, if you're going to have an army of goons, they might as well look good. We know he likes those arms.
The bearded man stands in supplication, presenting a broken bow staff. Not sure what it symbolizes. The organ player uses a key blast to blow up a waterfall, behind which is someone injured. It's Geese from the first movie. So, Terry defeated him by whirlwind kicking him into a koi pond at the end of the first movie and then immediately leaving. He was face down in the koi pond, but what happened to his eye? Why is it covered in bandages?
Well, koi fish are very feral on here.
Oh dear.
They just went up to his eye and did, and he lost
his eye. Oh.
I mean, what do fish do? They go. That's what fish do. Like over and over again.
Geese recognizes the organ player as Krauser. Krauser sought him out to discover the name of the one who defeated Geese. And the defeated man tells him Terry Bogard.
Because he couldn't just look it up on the internet.
I mean, Krauser finishes playing with his big organ and repeats the name that he had clearly heard ages ago, seemingly for the first time. And then we get the second title card.
I really hope he finished playing with his big organ off screen. Why would you say his big organ? I just don't get it.
It's a huge, massive organ that he's playing.
It's low-hanging fruit!
What should I call it?
I rescind my statement.
Exactly. We cut to a dockyard where Terry is working. His foreman tells him to break for lunch, but just that... No. Okay, I've got to address the Scottish accent on the foreman. What? Like, this guy inexplicably has this Scottish accent. Nobody else has a Scottish accent, so he isn't in Scotland.
Just immigrated. What's this anti-immigration stance you're making?
It's a bad Scottish accent.
Well, he doesn't want you coming over, Arthur.
Wait, I need to listen to it. Give me 2 seconds. Okay, I rescind my previous statement. He should be exported.
Deported.
Deported, sorry.
Exported by FedEx.
Anyway, above Terry, the chain holding some beams breaks, and rather than escape crushing death, Terry punches and kicks them away. Terry then brushes off the foreman's wonder, but feels a pain in his leg, before brushing that off too, and going to get some food.
It was so awkward. I used to practice martial arts once, and goes, ow, until I got an arrow in the knee.
He joins a kid who is fishing at the end of the pier, of a pier. The kid is Tony and is petulant when offered food. Behind them, 4 kids are pretending to be the 4 main characters from the first movie. Terry, Andy, Joe, and Geese.
Which makes you wonder even more how Krauser didn't know the name of Terry.
Yeah, these
3... When fucking kids know!
4 random kids know the entire story.
First, okay, I'd like to address Tony, because you were like, he was petulant when he was offered food. No. Terry made a comment about a tiny fish and was like, nice catch, which sounded very sarcastic. Of course, I'd be angry too.
I suppose it depends if you're listening to the dub or the sub.
If you have to watch this, don't watch the dub.
The dub, he didn't sound like he was saying it sarcastically, but I did not listen to this part of the Japanese dub.
Oh no, it's rather more the comment of the tiny-ass fish, and he's just like, oh, you know, nice catch. It's like, don't patronize me, random guy with a arrow to his knee.
Well, Tony wants to slap Terry's name out of the kids' mouths, and finally someone calls Terry a wolf. Because that was one of my issues with the first movie. Terry wasn't referred to as a wolf once, even though the title of the damn thing was, like, Legend of the Wolf.
Yeah, we were seeing how the legend was established. Maybe it's kind of like a myth, or those legends that just get more and more and more messed up until one day Terry's like, whatever, I guess I'm a wolf.
I'm going to go to some furry message boards now. Get a fursuit.
To make up for it, they do keep saying wolf in this one. But the kids make fun of Tony because Tony's dad was a street fighter and he died in a fight. Fucking kids, man.
Yeah, it was amazing. Ha ha, your dad died! You can't play with us because you're an orphan. Half orphan.
So Tony fights them, and Terry steps in to stop Tony from killing one of them. After the kids leave, apart from Tony, Kim Kapwan, the Taekwondo champion from Korea, turns up and challenges Terry to a fight. So they fight. Terry's leg hurts, so Kim lands a decent hit, causing Terry to do a whirlwind punch and dump Kim in the sea. But he quickly rescues him.
Wait, isn't that exactly how he beat Geese?
Yes.
So Terry can't win a fight unless there's water around.
and koi fish. If there's no koi fish, then his victim survives. Or doesn't lose an eye.
Kim leaves to resume training, and Tony begs Terry to train him. Sorry, tongue twister. Terry refuses, but Tony follows him and continues to hound him. Terry can feel Krauser in the street ahead, so stops Tony and calls out to the organ player. Krauser apparently watched the fight with Kim and noticed that Terry's leg was having trouble. This is actually the last time that comes up, isn't it? Because we'd never find out why his leg was hurting him.
That's a good point. No, we never do. It just continues on without that ever popping up again.
And also, I didn't fit it into my notes anywhere, but Terry never goes back to work after lunch. He just stops this fight between the kids, has a fight with some random guy, and then wanders off.
Maybe that he's still in his lunch break.
I don't think he was working there. He was just around. He just arrived at the construction site and went, "How do you do, fellow kids?"
I gotta do something, so might as well move these heavy bags.
Yeah, I'm totally working here. Hello, neighbor. That's also how he gets a place to sleep. He just enters a random house and goes, "Hello, neighbor."
Terry asks who this guy is, but Krauser tells him that he has to defeat him first. Terry loses. Krauser has a flashback to killing someone before Tony tells him that he only won because Terry was tired. Krauser tells Terry to rest and then come find him in his castle in Germany. Well, he tells the kid that to pass along the message. And Krauser walks away while Tony is trying to wake up Terry.
He's tired. Tired Terry gets taken by Tony.
I like that it was never specified, like, instructions, and Clear pops up at the wrong castle and beats up the owner.
I mean, I have a severe concussion. I don't remember what Krauser looks like, but he said, "German castle, you're German, this is a castle, I'm gonna beat you up."
Yeah, he enters a castle and there's Dracula. Talking about a pile of miserable secrets.
We cut instead to a flashback from Krauser's childhood, where he met Geese for the first time, his half-brother. We fade back in to find that it was Geese having the flashback. He's interrupted by a member of the Blues Brothers to inform him that Krauser beat up Terry. Geese tells the man to put the plan in motion.
And then we find out that Terry's having that flashback instead.
Inception. We return to Terry, who is having a nightmare about Krauser. He wakes to find himself in a random apartment, being tended to by Tony's mum.
But turns out that was a flashback.
God. She's remarkably calm as she tells him that he was in a coma for 3 days. And then she begs him to not get Tony involved in fighting, which Terry is happy to agree to, saying that he's leaving town. Cut to him leaving town. Unfortunately, the train station is where Tony works, shining shoes, so he sees Terry about to get on the train. Tony tries to convince Terry to stay and decides to abandon his sick mother, but is told no, because what the fuck?
You know, that's a really valid way to put it.
As the train leaves, the Blues Brother watches it go, menacingly. While Terry is chilling with some booze in the train, Tony is laid on top of the train, getting dust and bugs in his hair. After getting off the train, Terry is chilling with more booze in the park, but he knows that Terry is right there. Terry then goes on a bender, as illustrated by a walking past neon bar signs while jazz plays montage. He ends the night face down in garbage after being mugged. Tony then asks Terry, why isn't he getting ready for the fight in Krauser's castle? This is the first time that Tony has passed along the message that Krauser is waiting for a rematch. Perhaps that's why, Tony.
Here he is with a massive concussion, super tired, and Tony's like, why are you not preparing? He's like, preparing for what, though? You can't think to tell me this, like, 2 days ago?
I told you on the second day of your coma.
Oh, well, that's helpful, Tony.
Could you tell me that before I became an alcoholic?
Let me tell you something when I knock you out.
We cut from wherever the hell Tony and Terry are to Japan, with Mai running up some stairs to a temple. She is greeted by Master Jubei and asks him if Andy is there. He tells her that Andy is in the mountains training and then gets handsy with her chest. Mai batters him, then runs off and doesn't notice that someone else is arriving at the temple, but Jubei does. I thought this was going to be more menacing than it was. Elsewhere, Andy is stood on a raft, which is tied to a rock in a roaring river. Maya attacks him because he didn't call, but this seems to be a ploy to knock him down. Also, Joe is there, which seems to be the only character trait that he has, since even the kids earlier were like, and I'm Joe, who is also here.
That's a good observation, yeah.
Joe says that Terry has gone missing after losing a fight, which gets Andy's attention, but doesn't distract him from another attack by Mai, and he puts her in the river. I hope she's a strong swimmer, because that, like, it was rapids. That was leading to a waterfall.
She's gonna fall in a coma for 3 days and then wake up again. It's okay.
I like that she was just bitching at him and like giving him grief. And he was like, no, stop. But the moment he heard about his boyfriend, he just bitch slapped her away effortlessly.
We cut to unexpected nudity with Mai in the bath, being Sundere, and then to Jubei spitting all over Joe, who is also there.
Oh no, this is going to start becoming a thing, isn't it?
Andy is surprised that Jubei has even heard of Krauser. Not only has he heard of him, but Jubei gives a history lesson about the family. This is a family in Germany. We'll see.
And then, yet Krauser didn't know that Terry was defeated, that Geese was defeated by Terry.
And then also Mai says the thing that we are all thinking. This is so fucking boring.
Apparently the family has the power to overthrow governments, so the head of the family is often referred to as the Emperor of Darkness. This never comes up again.
What?
Just give it one more movie.
I'm saying
Emperor of Darkness all the time.
I wanted to have like more context for Emperor of Darkness, like the whole etymology of that title. Why Emperor of Darkness? Like, I don't think they ever called anyone in real history an Emperor of Darkness. They called Nobunaga Devil King, but whatever. Nobunaga.
That's because nobody else has had the power to overthrow entire governments.
How dare you? It's a Yu-Gi-Oh card. That's history right there.
Shouldn't he be called Emperor of Overthrowing Governments?
That's a bit of a mouthful, though.
Yeah, but, like, makes more sense. Like, overthrowing governments, darkness, I don't know, like, some people would find it cool.
Anyway, it turns out that flashback we saw of Krauser killing someone earlier, that was his father, and it was his 16th birthday.
Which Jinbei was having.
We cut to Krauser, who has a flashback to his dad beating him up when he was 6, and then him killing his father 10 years later.
I want to point out that we get all these like flashbacks of Geese and Krauser, and like it never comes into play at all.
Yeah, Geese says, "Oh, I'm going to get strong and kill you," and then that's the end of it, as far as Geese is concerned.
Like it doesn't contribute to the plot at all. It's just like Terry gets beaten up. Terry has to beat up the Krauser. Like we don't like sympathize with Krauser or anything at any point. He's just a weirdo.
I mean, I feel like knowing that Krauser's tears ran dry was very important to the plot.
He had no more salt.
Yeah, low sodium. That's a medical issue. He should have seen someone.
Now we know why he loses to Terry.
Spoilers!
Back in Japan, Jumbei says that they should never even think about fighting Krauser. So Andy gets up to go fight Krauser. Mai tells him no, Joe tells him yes, and Jumbei says that they'll have to beat him first.
So you're telling me Mai says no, Joe says yes, and Jumbei says maybe?
Yes. Clearly they just need to get Mai to flash him and then knock his lights out while he's distracted. Anyway, back with Terry, he's drunk and passed out on a bench when he's confronted by some toughs. Terry kills one of them. I mean, he's laid on the ground with his eyes open and he's not moving. He's dead.
I watched the English dub. Or no, that made be a different moment, but there's a moment where he beats up a guy and he has like as he lays down passing out slowly, he has like an inner monologue like, I can't believe this is happening to me. He was trying just a minute ago. Go, what am I gonna tell my wife?
Yeah, that's a bit later. That's the boxer.
Just, I mean, it's not like, it's not that deep, but like his inner monologue has that kind of tone, like he's the protagonist.
I mean, it's like Johnny in the Chrono Trigger anime that we watched. As he's flying towards the wall, he has this inner monologue that's really super serious.
Yeah. But this is like Johnny is fairly well featured in that anime. Like, he has some screen time compared to the body of the thing. And here, this is just a disposable thug that our protagonist has to punch. And he's slowly passing out and he has an inner monologue. Like, we don't need to know what he's thinking.
Terry then challenges the others, and elsewhere, news of the fight has spread really quickly, and Tony overhears people talking about it. Tony makes it to the park and finds Terry and at least one survivor. I don't like the angle of one of the necks. Sirens, meanwhile, are growing louder. But instead, we cut to Japan, where Andy and Junbei have a fight.
Can you really call that a fight?
Andy wins, so everyone but Junbei leaves for the airport. Meanwhile, Terry is in a jail cell.
Like, all I'm saying is Andy versus Junpei was Logan Paul versus Mike Tyson.
I didn't watch that fight, and yet I know exactly what you mean.
I didn't watch it either, and that's the problem.
I mean, I think everyone knew.
We cut to an airport where Andy decides he'll go to Germany, while Joe says he'll try and find Terry. Mai is hanging on to Andy, she says, for camouflage, but it's not like they're secret agents, they're martial artists.
Which is exactly why the camouflage is so bad.
Joe gets handed a letter, which, despite looking like a love letter, has Terry's location inside it. Somehow, for some reason.
that's so stupid. Like, random... What is it? A girl comes up to him, gives him a note, and he's like, who the heck are you? Oh, looks like someone gave us information. Like, what?
I know where Terry is because I read this letter handed by this random person at an airport.
And you cross your head to ask Geese whether who took you.
I feel like Joe, the note that Joe was given is like a drawing and he just misinterpreted what's being drawn on there. Like there's like a crude drawing of two stick figures and a heart because it's a fan, and he's like, oh my god, I know where Terry is.
Hey, it's not his fault he's illiterate.
Oh, also, you know how you keep saying Joe is there, but he does nothing to Junpei, and then Junpei's like, okay, I guess he can go.
Yeah, it did sound like Junpei was saying, you all have to fight me.
Right? And it just Joe's just there, just watching Andy. And then when Andy defeats him, and Joe's like, anyway, I'm going to go there too, because I need to be there.
Joe's just hanging out there. He doesn't actually train there or anything. He's like, hey, I'm also here. Don't forget about me, Joe.
Time passes, and Terry is let out of jail, and he finds Tony waiting right outside. Joe is also there. Joe punches Terry in the breadbasket and tells him that Andy is going after Krauser. Then Joe leaves.
He needs to be somewhere else.
he's to hurry up to his next cameo. He got a contract from Sega. He's going to be in the new Like a Dragon.
We cut to Germany, where Mai and Andy are in a rowboat scouting the castle, which they decide is deserted. Like, how many rooms can you see from the lake? It's up, right, like, really high from the lake.
And then in the window they see Joe.
But the beard guy from the start of the OVA is covertly watching them. It seems that Krauser is acting as bodyguard for the Queen of Nottingham for a month. So this clearly isn't set in the real world then, since Nottingham is a county, not a country. Mai emotionally blackmails Andy into agreeing to stay for a few days, then goes shopping on her own. Like, flying cost a lot in the 1990s compared to today, so surely it would be more cost-efficient to remain there and get part-time jobs or something? Anyway, Mr. Beardy Guy turns up behind Mai and introduces himself as Lawrence Blood. He's in charge of the castle while Krauser's away. He then invites her for dinner. Time passes, and Andy runs off to find Mai, because she hasn't come back, finding one of her fans embedded in a tree. Elsewhere at some...
She was very rough with that fan.
Elsewhere at some Roman ruins. So I don't know where in relation to this castle or the town they are. Lawrence is being threatening towards Mai, so they yakuza their clothes off and fight. He wins and ties her to a column, which is where Andy finds her shortly after with some unexpected almost nudity. Lawrence goads Andy into a fight, which he loses, and results in Andy destroying some historically important architecture. Andy cuts her down and acts like he won the day, and then we go back to Terry and Tony, where Terry is absolutely bladdered and Tony is trying to get him out of the bar. Axel Hawke appears and challenges Terry. Since Terry is clearly in no shape to fight, and Tony challenges Axel's sidekick, protege, to a fight, Axel lets it happen for funsies. Tony immediately loses. Twice. Meanwhile, Terry is remembering being beaten up by some toughs as a kid, much like Krauser was by his father.
Wow, too soon.
He's even shot and staged the same way.
He's still traumatized, Krauser. Like, he does this thing every year where he goes, picks up a rose, throws it behind him, and then plays an organ.
Then we get a montage of multiple beatings by people before Terry finally returned to get revenge on the toughs from the start of the flashback. Since Tony won't stay down, Axel and his protege leave, so Tony wins by default. Terry checks on Tony, and the kid says that he won because of his good luck charm, Terry's discarded gloves. Terry is baffled that he has them. He threw them away right in front of Tony. It would be a surprise if the kid didn't have them.
I mean, they were nice gloves.
Terry's like, give me the gloves. And the kid's like, what gloves? And he's like, wait, you didn't pick them up? And then we have a sequence of them going to buy new gloves.
Terry puts on his gloves and knocks Axel out in one punch. And then he has that protagonist thought, so how did he beat me, blah, 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 as he's passing out. Time passes, and Tony wakes to find himself in a sidecar attached to a motorbike that Terry is driving. We cut to the Queen of Nottingham, I assume, in a parade car. Krauser is in a hotel room overlooking the parade, and Joe is there. He was pretending to be delivering room service. There's a fight, and then we cut to Terry and Tony in the mountains somewhere, where Terry is decimating the local wildlife habitats. Later, while Tony is sleeping, Terry is visited by the ghost of Lily, who died in the previous movie, and also the ghost of Master Tang, who also died while he was teaching the Chi technique.
Oh, I remember that.
They say things that I guess inspires Terry's confidence. Like, what I heard did not really inspire me, but I mean, we're different people.
What do I do, Lily? I don't know. Wow, you're so right.
I mean, the next day, Terry picks up a newspaper and announces that they're not driving to Germany, as Joe had been hospitalized with 24 broken bones. There are 27 bones in one hand, and we saw Krauser crush one of Joe's hands, so I don't think it's as bad as they're making out. We cut to the hospital, where it appears Andy is walking away, having left Mai there. Terry and Tony rock up and hurry in, finding Mai in one of the rooms. And Joe is there. I ruined the punchline because that just had me giggling all day.
Yeah, they were going to see Mai, actually. And Joe was just there, coincidentally, was laying in that room.
Exactly.
Like, hey, guys, I got 37 bones broken. Did you see that? Oh, yeah, yeah, you're coming to see Mai. Sure, go ahead, doctor. I'm just going to be here.
Joe is unconscious with 24 broken bones, internal bleeding, severe damage to his organs. He'll not be fighting for the rest of the anime, is what the plot seems to be saying.
But he'll still be there.
Joe wakes and tells Terry where to find Andy, so Terry and Tony leave. It's not explained how Joe knows this.
Well, and yet Krauser had to ask Geese.
Andy is waiting in a cemetery at their father's grave, and together they go to a ruined Shinto shrine to fight. They go on for ages until Terry wins with the Dark Haddo. That was Street Fighter 2. No, it was a technique that he literally just came up with.
It's so stupid, like, what technique was that? I don't know, I just came up with it.
And he knows that he can use it to defeat Krauser.
I remember that time when Joe appeared out of nowhere and I came up with this technique.
In the morning, they drive to Germany, I guess. The graveyard was in America. That's an established fact. And they get on the motorbike and drive to Germany.
And you like get the Indiana Jones sequence where it shows you the world map and da 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 da.
Meanwhile, in Germany, Krauser is having breakfast and tells his butler that he dreamed of his father. The butler suggests it was a premonition. Krauser's teacup shatters suddenly, making him laugh, and then he goes to the Great Hall where he's going to await any visitors.
And play with his huge organ.
I feel like we could have, like, this anime could have been, like, half its duration if we just didn't waste time on pointless Krauser stuff.
Yeah. So Krauser plays with his giant organ while Terry and Tony arrive on the motorbike and sidecar. The pair are led into the Great Hall, and Terry faces off against Krauser.
And unfortunately, Joe was in fact not there.
After some back and forth, Terry breaks Krauser's big organ, then defeats him.
Must have been devastating.
Krauser then swan dives out of a hole in the wall and sinks to the bottom of the lake. So yeah, all of his enemies seem to need defeating by submersing them in water. Except for that boxer. That was a one-off.
That's where he lived. Oh, wait, no, because Geese is still alive. Never mind.
Elsewhere, Geese is feeling renewed after learning of Krauser's death. And then we see Terry dropping Tony off at a train station where Tony's mother is waiting, having been given a ticket by Terry. Or sent a ticket. They got there really fast. I mean, it did take them a while to drive to and from Germany. Terry then throws his hat away, and we get the credits. So, was this a good adaptation of Fatal Fury 2?
I mean, Joe was there.
Yeah, there was a bunch of people there. And Krauser was there, even though we didn't want him to be there.
Mai was there. She's introduced in the game. She wears the exact same outfit, which doesn't leave much to the imagination. Now, almost every fight started with a side-on view, like 2D, a 2D fighter should. But the story didn't match. In the game, Krauser hosts a tournament, but beats up all the fighters trying to find Terry. You know, because he can't ask those kids who Terry is. And also, Lawrence is a matador, and yet there are zero bulls in this.
He does have little horns on his head.
That red blanket he's carrying everywhere, he just uses it to, like, reveal things rather than, you know, tame bulls, which is its purpose. So is this a Yeta, a Nani, or a Baka?
Okay, so I'm a bit torn between Baka and Nani because it feels like a nothing burger. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. After watching the anime, I just kind of forgot to rank it on one of the three because it just did not register in me that I had finished it because it's like I got nothing out of it. But we had so much fun discussing it in the podcast that I feel like I have to honor it and just at least give it a Nani for Joe.
Gosh.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna agree with that. It was terrible, but I feel like we managed to bring some enjoyment to it.
For me, it was a Nani. Krause's noisy armor was never not funny to me. It sounded like a squeaky leather chair every time he moved. But the anime didn't really blow me away. The action scenes were pretty tame. So it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good either. And I gotta assume they live on Pangaea, because you can ride a motorbike from America to Germany. Because we know Terry is broke. He says as much. And also someone took his wallet, so he has even less money than that.
I have to say, with the fights, they felt a bit forced sometimes. Like, I don't know, just people would walk up to Terry and be like, fight me.
I mean, literally, that happens twice. Three, if you include Krauser. But yeah, does it deserve its My Animalist score of 6.69?
That's a bit high. I have to say, that's just a bit high. I would give it a 4 at most.
Yeah, maybe 5. But 69 is a funny number.
Especially with my.
And we didn't get unexpected nudity, so 69 is appropriate to make up for that.
And unexpected almost nudity because her top was open. But yeah, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Gus.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGreen.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.